Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
Another episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons. We're back. Another guest, Ross Reynolds, out of Waukee, Iowa, turned Iowa lineman, now 49er, hanging out with George and CJ out in San Francisco. He has quite a story. He's ascended very quickly to a very cool point of his life. He talks about the Super Bowl and his time at Iowa. It's a good one. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 119 of the podcast, and today we're joined by another former teammate of ours, kind of another similar story to us, an under-recruited Iowa kid, was able to get to Iowa on scholarship, but a guy that had to grind his way through the program just like everybody else, put in his time, a weight room warrior, a guy that probably holds several records there at the university now because he was just an absolute stallion when it came to strength, conditioning, speed, and agility. Man, that's one of the biggest memories. I remember this guy just dominating conditioning every single time around. Now he's a San Francisco 49er and has a Super Bowl appearance under his belt. So, Ross, welcome to the podcast, and hopefully we can get him some pretty good stories.
Yeah, appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
Ross Reynolds in the building. Ross, talk about that, your strength conditioning. I remember you in the weight room too. And obviously strength conditioning, Coach Doyle, massive part of the Iowa program. In your mind, coming from, and we'll get back there, but coming from Waukee, making the trek down I-80 to Iowa City, how important was strength conditioning for you, and how did you view that as part of your, part of how you were going to ascend in the Iowa program?
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I pretty much owe almost everything Coach Doyle. Yeah. I mean, everybody does at Iowa. He kind of changed everything. I got there. I was fat. I'll admit it. A little overweight.
What did you come in at?
Oh, I think I came in at like maybe 310.
So we talked about this. We did a nutrition episode a couple episodes ago, and we kind of mentioned how some of the linemen come in at the correct weight, but it's not the right weight.
No, too much fat, too much fat on the bones. That's what it was. And so he kind of, that first year was a little rough. Didn't know if it was going to be for me. I don't know. I think that kind of happens for everybody. But
dude, it took me 3 years. We had to go to a Big Ten championship. Think about it. I had to fucking watch success happen before I all the way bought in.
Yeah. No, I mean, and then you see, like, well, that was like my first year. Sheriff was there, and he was like, I mean, it's Brandon Sheriff.
Yeah.
Fucking massive, insanely strong. And he's part of, I mean, he's the master, one of Doyle's many masterpieces that he has.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he, of course, Doyle, it just, I mean, it took time. Once I fully bought in, it was fully bought into Coach Doyle and his nutrition and everything that he does. You know, just went to town every day. Was it sucked? I'm gonna be honest. I mean, nobody enjoys it. I mean,
yeah,
there's some people that enjoy it and they're fucked up in the head. But
yeah, a little bit. Talk about you specifically at 310. Mm-hmm. What did that look like then? Transforming kind of that lean mass, that muscle mass. Mm-hmm. Give me a time frame of how kind of the major steps in your process of like when you finally did. Like, did he have you lose weight personally and then gain back some good weight? Is that how that worked?
So it was, I came in, I think it was 311, 312, and I dropped down like 288 and then just started, I mean, eating right and, you know, taking advantage of the weight room and everything and buying into the program. And then it was, you know, from then on, it was just every day going in, you know, and doing it. I mean, you had to, there's some kids that it just doesn't, they don't fully buy in and
sure.
You know, part of it, and that's one of the things you got to do with Doyle. You have to buy in, otherwise it's not going to work.
Yeah, if you don't buy in, it's hard to wake up in the, you know, in the morning we saw it all the time,
dude. The days that it was hard to buy in were the days where it was in season on like a Tuesday morning, whatever, Monday morning, when we had to lift after we had just played a game and after camp had already happened and everything.
Yep.
The morning, still waking up before practice to lift, I was like, dude, what?
The week you go to play Wisconsin, you're fucking maxing out. It's like, no, but I mean, he did what he did. He did it to fucking everybody. But no, it was, the change for, I went 311, 288, and then just started putting, you know, working on.
When did you feel like body-wise you turned the corner and you kind of felt comfortable? You started to feel like you really could hang?
Mm-hmm. I think it was like my third year, really. Okay. I mean, that was, I would say that actually that summer going into that third year and just, you know, started to get the speed up and everything. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but I mean, the biggest thing is just the one thing I really found out that helped a lot was, I mean, going in and work, like lifting with the older guys, like lifting with you, like Ike and all those, I mean, Ike and Sean, you know, the guys that fucking work Daddy their Rush. Asses. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Daddy.
What do you have to say about those three guys, Boone, Ike, and Sean in our grade?
Oh, shit.
Because I have to imagine that as the direct grade above you in that O-line room, that those three played a kind of a huge part in your development, right?
100%. I mean, Sean, I was his fucking roommate for camp for 2 years in a row, and I had to deal with his damn snoring. It was, couldn't sleep, but no, it was, they played a massive part in it, especially, I mean, Ike was always there if you needed anything. I mean, he's like that for everybody. He's an amazing fucking guy. He cares about everybody. That's how he is.
What is it about Ike that's so special?
I don't know. It's just his I think it's personality. Like he always finds a way to have a good time or like make it somewhat enjoyable.
Always.
It could be the shittiest. You're running fucking game simulators and, you know, he's making jokes or something.
And and you could hear that laugh and it's just over.
Yeah. Yeah, the laugh. And then, you know, Sean just being dad, he would make sure everybody was fucking in line doing what they're supposed to.
Yep.
And then Boone, I mean, it was that my
Boone is a grinder, dude.
Oh yeah. I mean, look at him. Fucking he's another one of Doyle's successes. I mean, he transformed him into a fucking hoss, and that's what he is. I was competing with him. I think it was his senior year, my junior year, you know, we were competing to play and it was awesome to go against, you know, a guy that's been playing for a couple of years and, you know, just fight Absolutely. Your ass off. So,
yeah,
no, they're three amazing guys.
Yeah. They're doing decent. I think that God, just thinking about Ike, he's so funny.
I miss him so much. I can't wait to get together with him and the young stallion.
Oh.
Yeah, he's dead now.
Yeah, he's a dad. He's a fucking dad. It's unbelievable. Yeah. He's one of those guys that you always fucking always remember. I mean Pinnacle Iowa
guy. Oh yeah, forever. Yeah. Ike likes to get into the kind of all three of those guys in the back house when we live there. Ike, Bo, and Josie, they all like to get into the hunting, the fishing, stuff like that. As we sit here doing the interview, you have a Browning gun safe sitting behind you.
Legendary backdrop. That's probably one of the best. That's probably the best backdrop yet.
You
wish there were guns out.
Just sitting.
I should just open it up for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of fit that prototypical, like, Brandon Sheriff, Austin Blythe, like, lineman, Iowa guy, hunter. Like, talk about that, like, legacy. I feel like it's a brotherhood within the brotherhood of Iowa football.
I think it's just kind of part of it's just, you know, there's that group of guys that really fucking loves it. I mean, we were
the Diesel Brothers.
Yeah. I mean, it was going fucking during we'd get done with our finals, you know, how you some guys would be done on Monday or Tuesday and we go fucking duck hunt the rest of the week. Wake up, you know, go lift, maybe if we had to go lift and then go duck hunt the rest of the fucking day.
All day.
When it's fucking 5 degrees out. Yeah. Yeah, we went out. We went out one day, a big group of us, and I fucking fell through the ice and got soaked. And that was
Oh my God! Really?
Oh yeah, yeah. And then you know, of course, Brian found out about it, and it was fucking just.
What did he have to say?
Oh, it just you know he finds something to make fun of, and that's or you know he finds some way to give you shit, and that's what.
Uh-huh.
Talk about Brian Ferentz. Give us a favorite or two favorite Brian Ferentz stories because they're always legendary.
Oh, I think some of my favorites are just his sayings he has for everything, or like his
everybody's name. An asshole. So if you're an asshole, that's a term of endearment. If you're a fucking asshole, he really is not a fan of you.
No, never be a fucking asshole. That's what he says. Nobody likes a fucking asshole. No, I mean how we could spend fucking, you know, we were supposed to have meetings and we'd spend the whole fucking meeting. He would tell stories and shit. And that was like the best, you know, after, especially during camp. You know,
with Sofranco in the room.
Oh my, yeah, especially Sofranco. Sofranco passed out in the back. Yeah, fucking
smelling the place up.
I mean, you could smell him as he walked down the hallway. No, it was yeah. I mean, getting Max riled up. Him, I think honestly the best was during camp when Brian was just fucking. You know, you're on your 26th fucking practice and he's just done with it. He, you know, it was just one of those days he's done with it, comes in, sits down and just tells stories. And that's what made it fun. I mean, camp sucks dick for everybody. I mean,
everybody,
awful. Yeah. Nobody enjoys it. And he can be a prick sometimes. Everybody can be a prick sometimes, but he would always be, he could be mad fucking 5 minutes ago. And the next he's telling stories, messing around with you. And that's Brian was
he a part of your recruitment?
Yeah, but it was mainly Coach Morgan was. I remember meeting Coach Morgan at the Hy-Vee, the Westlakes Hy-Vee in West Des Moines, right off the interstate. We met there at breakfast one morning, and that's kind of actually that morning was that time we met him at Hy-Vee was the time that he said they were gonna, you know, offer me a full scar or offer me the gray shirt opportunity or whatnot.
So you were originally going to be a gray shirt.
Yeah. So I was originally going to be a gray shirt. And I got invited to, so I didn't really get a scholarship until after my senior season was completely done. And Coach Morgan said that they wanted me to come up for the, everybody who had, guys who get scholarships have a, what the fuck's the day called? When you come take your
I'm trying
recruiting trip or not your
it's like an official
official visit. Yeah, when you come take your official visit, he said that he wanted or wanted me to come up when everybody else came up, and so I came up and we're sitting Coach Ferentz in his living room, whatever, and that's when I got the full scholarship. But yeah, I was originally planning to be on a gray shirt, not going until that December or whatnot.
I had to imagine that's a pleasant surprise when they tell you that was going to be the situation.
Yeah, that was a big thing. I did I mean, I was just tickled pink to fucking get a gray shirt opportunity or whatever.
Right. Of course.
And then they offered me the full scholarship, and it was
– Jealous. For those that don't know, coming out of Waukee Warriors, which is where I rep now, repping them. that's where I live.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify, one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Washed Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
You, as far as a high school lineman, we would have played each other because from Marshalltown, but I don't remember. I do kind of remember playing you my senior season when you were a junior, but I didn't, like, at the time, I wasn't like, you know, you don't know who's going to Iowa. You don't know what's going on. I remember you, obviously. Around that time, your junior season is probably around the time things started to pick up. What did it look like for you as far as other options besides Iowa?
Yeah, so I think my first scholarship was to, or first offer, it was to Western Illinois. AJ Blazek, who actually played at Iowa.
Legend.
Yeah, he was the O-line coach there. And so he was, you know, he was all over it. And they were the first ones. And then it was, you know, Illinois State. And then it was UNI. Oh, shit.
Was Iowa State ever a part of the picture?
Yeah, so Iowa State was, you know, I grew up in Iowa. I wanted to go to Iowa. I knew that. I mean, that was a goal ever since I was a little kid. I want to play Iowa, you know, play in Kinnick. But no, Iowa State, they were the ones who really seemed really interested or whatever. And they kind of toyed around or whatever. And nothing
they
ever,
always do.
Yeah, nothing really ever happened. You know, they offer out fucking 100 scholarships every year, just like Nebraska. Nobody goes. But,
it's tough. Hey, it's tough.
I wouldn't say either of those losers anyways, dude.
No, I'm just saying, it's like, yeah, they, you know, they acted like they wanted to give a scholarship out or whatnot. Nothing ever happened. And then the Iowa thing happened. It was like,
obviously, easy decision.
Yeah, that's no question. I mean, Coach Farron said, yeah, we want to give you a scholarship. I was like, okay, I'm coming. Like, it wasn't like I didn't have to go home and fucking think about it.
Right. Yeah.
There was
you didn't
play hardball there.
Oh, no. Yeah, I
didn't really have to sell you on that one. So then, you said how you about your third year, you started to feel comfortable. It would have been our fourth year. So that would have been 2016. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, that's about the time that you started to play like field goal unit. Mm-hmm. Because you were on the field goal unit with the Diesels and Keegan, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But not that a whole lot. I mean, it was mainly, I mean, I got a couple times, but it wasn't, I wasn't.
You were a part of it though. Yeah. And then when did like real playing time start to happen? Was that senior year or junior year?
That was my junior year.
Junior year?
Okay. So your senior year. That was when it kind of happened. And I was rotating with Boone.
Because Boone was hurt.
Yep. Yeah. So I was rotating.
Because he had the most unfortunate.
His foot was so fucked up. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
It was me, and I was rotating with Boone, and then eventually, you know, Boone's foot was just so messed up, and so I started rotating with Keegan or whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean Welsh was playing fucking right tackle, you know, because I came out as well.
Yep.
So I started playing then, and then in senior year I got the opportunity to play, you know, the whole time, which was, you know, that's what you dream of.
And you spent most of your time at right
left guard.
Yeah. Okay. Is that where you really felt most comfortable? Because I mean, I know all you guys kind of know all the positions a little bit, but mm-hmm. Did you spend most of your time there coming up through the years, or did you, was there ever a chance that you were going to be somewhere else?
Yeah. So it was like, I mean, I could have played right guard, but it was, with when Brian was my line coach, I was playing, you know, left and right. And then Coach Paulusek got there. And that's when I kind of, they, you know, him and Coach Ferentz decided I was just going to
stick it out at left.
Yeah. Stick it out at left. And just,
like, how'd we like Timmy?
I mean, it was, I loved Tim.
Absolutely loved
him. I saw it as, you know, when Tim got there, I thought it was an opportunity more than anything. Because before that, I hadn't really been playing, you know, and so I saw it as an opportunity and, you know, took advantage of it, I guess, and just worked my ass off even more, or tried to, and, you know, things worked out or whatnot. But it's just
the energy that Coach Paul said, it can't be matched by anybody else. Like,
it seemed like you'd take Coke and pre-workout at 5:30 in the morning every morning.
If you gave me Coke and Adderall, I still couldn't get that lit.
No. And he doesn't drink coffee, so it doesn't make fucking sense.
It doesn't make sense, dude. At all times of the day, doesn't matter how long he's been working on football continuously, the dude is screaming his ass.
Screaming, dude. Unbelievable.
And you can hear him from down the fucking hallway. You could walk by the come up the stairs, you know, to the meeting rooms, and you could hear him in our O-line room just yelling.
He's just got one of those farm tanks full of jet fuel, and he just on the nozzle every morning and gets his fill up.
When he goes to sleep, he has to sleep so goddamn hard.
I remember there was one morning he was late, and like we had started meetings, like he was like he hadn't even left his fucking house, and we'd started meetings, and it was he was on another fucking level that morning. He came in hot as shit. he looked like he was fucking, his face was bright red. He was ready to just fucking kill somebody. He was so, he was so fucking pissed at himself, but
I love 200 him. Miles an hour. It was refreshing. He helped bring like a new juice to the team when him and Kelton Copeland stepped in that year. That was super exciting. They were good dudes.
Quite a bit of energy. Gave you Coach Woods. I mean, it was.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to get into, cause we don't have all the time. You played through your senior year. As far as after you graduated, you know, you guys won the Outback Bowl against Mississippi State. I guess how did it feel to go out on that note?
That was unbelievable. I mean,
you know, cause you were only 1 year after us. And so you had experienced before the pinstripe the year previous, you had experienced 3 bowl losses as well. So you knew you were kind of part of that group, you know, our class and your class where it was like a bowl win is so, it was like elusive for this long time.
Yep. And I think the biggest thing is you felt so bad for the seniors, you know, going out on a loss. We had the opportunity to finish with a win for each class, and that was awesome. Mm-hmm. But no, that was unbelievable beating a fucking SEC team. You know, it was at a bowl, a game that it seemed like it was our second home going back down to Tampa. But no, that was unbelievable. And the being able to party with the coaches after that game. I don't know if you guys got the opportunity after Pinstripe Bowl, but I remember Brian telling us that he would buy us a drink if we won that game. He would buy the seniors a drink or whatever. And so I remember after that, we all had a huge party at the hotel. And it was, you know, being partying with fucking, you know, Captain Kirk was there. He was – Coach Ferentz was there drinking his beer, his – I can't remember what it's called, St. Pauli Girl or whatever it was.
What?
Yeah. No. Yeah. What is it called?
Brian,
I don't know.
Brian told us that he was just going to give us the credit card if we won the Big Ten championship.
Oh,
he just said that it was on him that night. Won the Big Ten championship, and we just shit the bed.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
That was unbelievable. Go out and win. Go out and be able to go out and hang out with your coaches in a different setting than fucking the facility.
Because at that point, you're no longer
responsibility.
When the clock hits zero on that game, like the relationship changes now because it's not. They no longer have responsibility over you, like. You know, you're still a representative of the program and such, but they don't have to worry about you being ready to go anymore. Like you've graduated and now the, you know, the child has left the house. Yeah. after that game, and I guess through that senior season, what was the aspiration as far as the NFL? Like, what was the outlook? You know, what was the goal for you?
I mean, I wanted to play. I mean, that'd been my dream. I mean, whenever you got asked in school what you want to do when you grow up is, I want to play. I mean, be in the NFL.
Yeah. And everyone looks at you like, okay, but like, yeah, really.
That's not fucking happening. No. And so it was, you know, we went back to work with Coach Doyle. Took 2 or 3 weeks off after the bowl game and went back to work with Coach Doyle and, you know, just went to town. And that was pretty intense. That was, but it was awesome training with, you know, we had almost everybody in my class was, you know, trying to do the same thing. So we're all training together still. So it was just like almost like another normal winter of workouts, but
it's got that like real cool, relaxed environment.
Yeah. Like
too.
Coach Doyle's not going fucking crazy at us. He's, you know, he's having fun messing around with everybody.
Yep.
He's good. He's easy. Good mood Doyle instead of bad mood Doyle. There's a difference here. So.
You're muted, Drake.
Oh, I'm muted. My fault. I said there's a serious difference between good and bad mood Doyle. And you really, really love good mood Doyle.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's a great time when he's in a good mood.
That spring of pro day training, like when he's in a good mood, like he knows that at that point, similar to like the coaching staff after that game, he knows at that point, you know, there's nothing on him, right? Like if you don't go have an NFL career, it doesn't look bad, you know, cause that's not his main goal as a strength condition coaches the Iowa Hawkeyes. Now he's been really good at that. It's a secondary benefit of the guys who play in the program. But at that point, it's not like, you know, he wants to make you the best Hawkeye lineman. And once you're no longer the current Hawkeye lineman, man, those days where he would be in that good mood that you're talking about, I would just want to stay out on the field. Like, let's train for 4 or 5 hours. This is fun as hell. Like,
it's enjoyable. It's not shitty. Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. Relax. There's no time frame because you're working out at like 9 a.m. and it's just like, whatever, man. It's like, whatever. So you go through pro day training and leading up to the draft, what was it like talking to any teams? Anybody like calling you at all? Or
yeah, so I talked to a couple teams. Funny thing, I never once heard anything from the 49ers. Never. Mm-hmm. I mean, never. Not a single thing at all. And so it was – you know, my agent and I, we didn't know really what was going to happen. and then on, you know, I watched the draft, you know, that third day was intense. I mean, I remember heartbeat like crazy, especially down towards the end, because you didn't know what was going to happen. And then it ended and then all of a sudden, you know, get a couple phone calls and, you know, I think I got a call from the Giants, the Ravens, the Saints, and then the 49ers.
Okay.
And I actually missed, I think I missed the first 49ers call because I was on the phone with the Giants and I was like, oh shit. And I didn't know who it was because, you know, it was
right.
It wasn't a California number or whatever. So, but I gave them a call back and, you know, we got everything, my agent got everything worked out and whatnot. And I was, you know, as soon as it was almost, I mean, I bet you 2 minutes after I decided that I was going to go there, you know, I got a text from George and CJ and it was like,
damn,
you know, I'm going somewhere where, you know, you have family there. And that's part of being a Hawkeye is we have, you know, guys all over the place. And so pretty much no matter where anybody goes, you know, you have a former teammate or a former Hawk that's going to be there and, you know, be there to help you out when you need stuff.
You got a young progressive head coach and a couple of former teammates, and that's a pretty good situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm always curious, Ross, how that works because it definitely didn't happen for me. The draft ends, and then you start getting all those calls, right? So the first team who calls you, what do they say? Like, do they give you a time frame to make a decision? Because they have to know that other teams are going to be calling as well, and you can't just say like the first team who calls, like, okay, I'm in, but like.
Well, in a way, it kind of comes down. I mean, think you've been a poor college kid the whole damn time. And then all these teams call you and offer you money. And it's like, I don't know what to do. And so, you know, I mean, that's where the agent is helpful because he kind of, he tells you what you need to do or whatnot. And then also my agent is really good because he would, you know, monitor what teams already have. So if they already have, you know, 5 or 6 guards on the team, then, you know, it's not looking good for you. And so And that was part of the decision. You know, I made sure to go somewhere that didn't have a whole lot of depth, you know, in the guard area, the interior lineman area.
Right.
But yeah, so it was, you know, they give you a call, teams start offering money and, you know, they try to make it sound really good.
Oh, of course.
They go into that recruiting mode, you know, like how when you're getting recruited or whatever.
I'm sure you heard a lot of like, oh, we were going to take you with that last pick, but we knew you were going to slip, and so we knew we'd have you here. Like,
yeah,
it's all that like, bullshit.
Okay, so why did you do it? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
But, no, it was a pretty intense experience. I remember my heart beating like crazy that whole damn time, you know, because it's something, like I said, it's something you've been dreaming of forever.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
And then you got I got the opportunity to... but no, I was so excited, you know, the Niners call and I was like, I would love, I mean, even the main, what I kind of wanted to do before was I would love to have been close to home, you know, been only a couple of hours away from home.
Right.
Now I'm fucking 26 hours away and it's a little bit, it was a little bit of a transition, a little bit of a jump, but I mean, I'm so excited to be a part. I mean, you know, everybody had talked, you know, shitty essentially about the Niners last year, said that we weren't really going to do anything, you know, win a couple games or whatnot. And then, you know, it was, you got there and I got there and we were in OTAs and stuff. And you could just see like Kyle Shanahan, just the way his mind works is unbelievable. The knowledge that he has of the game is, you know, he knows what's going to happen before the play even starts. He knows what so it was, you know, it's an awesome opportunity to be out there and be, you know, awesome O-line coach, awesome guys in the room. I mean, Joe Staley, fucking legend.
Oh, yeah.
Legend. Awesome. Hall of Famer, dude. You got to play with Joe Staley.
He was the reason I wore number 74 in high school. Like, and that's how it was for a lot of guys. Like, we all talk about it. We all give him shit because that's how it was. A lot of guys wanted to wear – we wore number 74 in high school or college or whatever because of him. You know, and then I had the opportunity to be in the room with him in the first
game. I was just about to say, how surreal was it to go from an under-recruited Iowa high school kid just like all of us mm-hmm. to the Super Bowl in that short of amount of time? Like, because it seems like we flew through Iowa. Everybody uh-huh. they flew through Iowa. They can't believe that time is over with. And now all of a sudden you're in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was – that was crazy. It was like my rookie season and – from the fucking we're going to Miami to go to the Super Bowl. Are you kidding me?
That's insanity.
And like I grew up a Packers fan, and so like that first time we played the Packers the first time we played the Packers, it was just kind of like the NFC championship kind of killed them, I guess, but it was insane seeing, you know, Aaron Rodgers on the field. I grew up, you know, watching him or whatnot, and then we played them in that NFC championship game. And all I remember is just, I mean, our defense was insane.
It was, your front seven was,
it's unbelievable.
Every defensive coordinator in the world would have just dropped his drawers and bent over for your front seven.
I mean, imagine I had to fucking practice against him. It was awful. It was awful. Yeah. But yeah, all I remember is, I mean, we played the Packers, and as soon as that game ended, and you see the confetti just hit the field, and it's just like, I remember watching this shit on TV, and now it's, you know, actually here, and
yeah,
and then going to the down to Miami for the Super Bowl, that was surreal as well. You know, it's just the amount of shit that we, you know, got to do and see, and I never thought I would ever be at the Super Bowl.
How weird was it being teammates with George at Iowa when he was a nobody and teammates with George with the Niners now that he's captain of the world?
Yeah, I mean, it was – that's pretty insane. It's just how, you know, I remember being him a skinny little twig, you know, when he was at Iowa, you know. And I do remember him making some, like, crazy-ass catches, you know, in college, some weird ones, you know, and now he does it all the time. It's like he's like the face of Nike right now, or like, you know, for Nike football, he's like the face, and you look through your fucking Snapchat and they give you an ad and it's George Kittle doing something for Verizon. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me?
It's stupid. Like,
it is. It's,
he has all the Visa commercials. Like, it's just dumb as hell.
He gets Bud Light shipped to his house every week and shit. It's like, yeah. What? What is going on?
I saw Sheriff got some a Bush shipment.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the nicest things is you can get some free shit if you really want it.
He called them blue smoothies.
Yeah, oh, I haven't heard that. I've only heard blue yummies. That's what we call them. But blue smoothies, that's a good
he
one.
He called them blue smoothies. And then Ike, of course, replied like smoothie time or something like that.
Yeah, stallion.
Did you see what Cole Crossan commented? He commented back like, you better be getting a shipment next week or something like that, or tomorrow or something. And Sheriff said, oh, yeah, I just called him and told him I needed enough for a half-day hunting trip.
It's probably at his doorstep already.
Of course. Well, Ross, thank you for joining us and telling us a little bit about your story. It's definitely a unique one. I kind of just sat here and like in that same kind of awe that you probably experienced through the whole process of it. Like, damn, that really is like, it's like fairy tale, right? So happy for you. It's awesome to watch you keep grinding. All the success we hope comes your way. And we appreciate your time coming on the podcast.
I appreciate it, guys. Been excited to be a part of this. So
awesome. Have a great rest of your Sunday. For those listening, that was episode 119 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. We'll be back again on Thursday. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.